This is the Authentic Persuasion Show. Hey everybody, Jason Cutter here. Welcome to another special guest series here on the Authentic Persuasion Show. This season, season seven, very excited to be talking to professional sales educators, people who are running programs, people who are literally impacting and affecting the future salespeople out there in the world. As you know, my mission is to help fill the world with authentic persuaders. And the tagline of this show is to be a guide for helping sales professionals and teams close more sales and make more money. And that means that wherever we go with these conversations, there's always value. I appreciate you for tuning in. I say this all the time, but if you're here, there's something in it. There's going to be something that we're going to talk about, and it's going to come up and it will impact you in some way. So hopefully you're taking notes. Hopefully you're ready. My guest today, very excited. This is going to be fun. I have Mr. Lamar Johnson. He is with the University of Texas at Austin. And what happened with Lamar is he was actually went to that school, left, spent 33 plus years in Procter & Gamble in sales, in supply chain, and just doing some great work there, and then decided to return to his alma mater and be a part of marketing and sales programs at the McCombs School of Business. And so much that we're going to talk about. This first episode, we're going to talk about authenticity. Lamar, thank you for being here. Welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show.
Great. Thank you. It's great to be here.
So, you went to school, then you go out there in the world and you end up at P&G for a pretty long stint. Back when long stints at companies were definitely a thing. How did all of that play into kind of what you learned about sales, what you saw sales as, and then, you know, how that translates into what you're teaching the future salespeople about sales?
Well, I didn't know I wanted to do sales until I stumbled into an interview. I was invited into an interview by P&G on campus, and I had three different majors. I didn't know what I wanted to do. I was finally a finance major, and quite frankly, all the jobs I was being offered, and fortunately, I was offered several, but they all sounded dull and boring, and just like I'd have to weather them to get ahead in the company, but I'd have to do this boring stuff. And so I was invited into the interview, and I hit it off with the recruiter. He made the job sound amazing. A lot of creativity involved, a lot of flexibility involved, worked out of your car in your home. You didn't have to go punch a clock. It just sounded like it fit me and my personality. It also sounded like it was something I could use not only my intellect or my brain power, but also my my personal values and my personal charisma, if you will, and combined with work ethic and brains and a little bit of charisma will take you a long way in sales. And so it sounded like it fit me really well. And I said, they must be lying to me. It sounds too good, but I'm going to go do it. And if it doesn't work out, I'll come back and get an MBA or something and go crunch numbers for some energy company or bank, which were the job offers in the late 60s and 70s at UT. So anyway, I did it, and I loved it, and promoted several times and ran several different sales organizations in different parts of the country. And during that time, and finally I moved into supply chain, which is a whole nother story, but it was always externally facing. So supply chain, working with customers on improving supply chain processes. I ran recruiting programs for P&G at several different universities. And when I had my six-year Dallas assignment, I ran the recruiting program at UT Austin, which was my alma mater. And of course, going back to Austin from Dallas and seeing the faculty that I remember and engaging with the students began to help me formulate a plan for what I wanted to do post-career one and have me go back to the university and bring the real world in and make sure that students were exposed to industry leaders, professionals, and got to work on real world projects, not five-year-old cases from books. And so fortunately, I had been a good alum. I'd given some money over the years, and And so when I called the dean, he was forced to pick up the phone and talk to me. And we just made a deal at the end of the day for me to come back, and he wanted me to teach. And I said, I think, quite frankly, teaching may not be my forte and may be something that will get stale over time. But what I'm really good at is building relationships with people and with companies. And I think for a long period of time, I can have experts come in that are fresh, that are doing the work, that are much more knowledgeable about current practices and current issues, and keep that flow coming into the business school, and do that in a way that creates a win-win relationship for the company and for the university. So that's what I'm doing today. I love it. I've been doing this since 2007. Probably no secret, I'm not a spring chicken, but I'll be 75 in June. I got a lot of energy. I don't take any medicine. I'm going to do this for as long as my body holds out, because I'm still excited every day to help people get a better education in the world of marketing and sales. And it's what lights my fire. Long answer to your question. Hopefully that was okay.
I love it. I think that's great. And just thinking about the path that you took and the time at P&G, what you thought was going to happen, where it went to. And then obviously now, you know, it's interesting to think about where life goes. When looking at sales and what you thought sales was going to be like when you got into it, like some charisma and this and that, and use some of your personal values and talents and kind of focus on the sales versus what it was really like versus sales now relative to then, 30 plus, 40 plus years ago. What comes to mind when you look at that kind of comparison?
You know, it's funny. I think the basic principles of sales haven't changed since I started in 1970 at P&G and what's out there today. I think it's phrased differently. I love the concept and the thought of problem solving and consultative sales, and because that's really working with your customer in a way that you both benefit. But if you're going to have the same customer for a long period of time, you need to make sure that the way you're working with that customer is mutually beneficial, and you're helping solve a business problem, ideally with your products. Sometimes you help solve a business problem that don't involve your products, and that just continues to increase your authenticity, that you're really there to help their overall business, even if it's not directly related to your products. And sometimes, and good salespeople do this, I've been known to recommend that they not buy my products and buy something else because it's a better deal for them. It helps them better than what I've got to sell them. So I don't know that that's changed. I evolved in my selling because I didn't know what I was doing early on. I didn't have a sales class. P&G trained me. They sent me to sales college, and it was a heavy dose of in the field, in with retailers up and down the street. But you know, they were teaching me a process for approaching the buyer and for getting information and for asking questions and for eventually making the sale. And I was expected to make sales, not in every store all the time, but I was expected to make sales when I had a quota. And that was all, to me, that was fun. That was competitive. That was a lot of fun. So, I think you'd say that, and by the way, the world of tech selling was invented while I was at P&G. I mean, I don't know what tech selling would have been in 1970 or 69. There weren't calculators at that point, you know, and you didn't have to go on the road to sell slide rules, which I used in my first job at P&G. And people say, "What's a slide rule?" I still buy one on eBay. I was thinking about going to buy one so I could show people the predecessor of the calculator. The technology's changed. Selling in a technology-based world has changed. We were interesting because we were really B2B sales, even though we were a B2C company. But our customers like Walmart and HEB here in Austin and Kroger, Albertsons, other chains all across the country bought our products and then resold them to our consumers. So we worked through our retailers in order to meet consumer needs with our products. The marketing people work directly on exciting the consumer to get them to go in the store and be interested in buying our stuff, but it had to be in the store in the first place. So the sales organization worked hand in hand with marketing. We had to make sure the product was there in a place where they could be seen, priced correctly, shelved in a way we thought was favorable to our products. And then the marketing people did their thing to get people in the store to be looking for things like Tide and Bounty and Charmin products, et cetera. So it was a collaborative effort, but I'm not really sure I can think of one big thing that's changed other than in the retailing business. We called on store by store by store because there were so many independent stores. So our customer was the manager or the owner of that IGA store in La Place, Louisiana, which is where I started in New Orleans. And great story about that, too. But and it elevated up. Walmart had a lot to do with changing this, but things got centralized and decisions got made at a much higher level that impacted retail. And so the type of salesperson that you had calling on the customer, at least for P&G, changed over time. We were probably 20% what we would call development sales reps, which meant that we were hired not to do that retail job for very long, to move up into sales management, versus probably 75 or 80% people who kept that job for a lifetime, working in a small retail area, getting to know those retailers over time. Relationships were critical. Building trust was critical. And today, that retailing job has gone away. So your entry into sales is as an account manager, dealing with MBAs or at least college graduates who own categories. And so the level of selling it in the consumer packaged goods world has been increased dramatically over the last 40 years, primarily by, and I'll give Walmart all the credit in the world, other companies begin to centralize decision-making and bring in much more talent to make buying decisions that would ultimately impact the retail store. So long answer to your question, but that's what I see.
And when you look at that, especially that change, and think of the tech sales, and sometimes it's dealing with a small company, right? Like what we were talking about, whether it's retail or it's a B2B type company, and you're selling to them, especially as you're training your students. Like there's the small ones, and then there's the large, let's say, enterprise sales. And then even to what you said about, you know, sometimes the best thing is to not sell them your solution, help them with something else, or, you know, tell them not to buy anything at all. Where do you see that fitting in with the students you're working with now? And what do they feel about that when you're talking to them about sometimes in sales, the best thing isn't to sell somebody?
All the students are amazed at sales. And I think if other educators are listening to this, they'll know. In fact, I just sat through a webinar yesterday consisting of maybe 50 or so sales educators around the country. And the topic was, how do you interest students in college in a professional selling kind of career or curriculum at that school? People tend to still have, particularly young people, tend to have a negative stereotype of sales. They think of it as somebody that's trying to get you to do something you don't want to do. And we've all had experience with salespeople like that. And your book, by the way, which I'll give a plug to, covers that very well throughout the book. And that's obviously not it. And so you have to have a way to explain to these young people that sales is problem solving, it's relationship building, it's trust building, it's improving business scenarios for both you and your customer, all of those things. And their eyes are open. They're not really heard it positioned that way. And then you carry that to the next step, is sometimes the best solution is to suggest they do something different than what you initially brought to them, either with another company or another product, because it might better fit what their needs are. And they go, wow, you would do that? And I said, particularly if you're working with a customer over the long haul and you're trying to build that authentic trust with that customer, suggesting something that your company doesn't make is a terrific way to get them to understand, okay, maybe this guy is really trying to help my business as opposed to just push something toward me that may or may not work for my business.
Well, and I think the big key, which goes back to what you were saying about relationships with individual retailers and stores and just businesses in general, and especially, you know, as things have been consolidated, is it's that relational long-term look versus the short-term transactional that most people think of when they think of sales, especially sales that's not necessarily the most enjoyable from a customer perspective. And I'm thinking about like the students you have various ages, but most likely early 20s in that bracket, and they don't know complex long-term relational sales. They see car sales, cell phones, furniture, their parents buy a house, and they're thinking short-term, one and done, and you never see that person again, right?
Yeah, exactly. And many of them are fascinated by the world of consulting, and they want to be, I guess we're fortunate, UT's got a bunch of bright kids, and the consultants are all here. I just had lunch with one last week that's been hired by Bain, and you know that all the top consulting companies here to hire them come and hire, and they pay a lot of money. And the students say, "I think I want to go be a consultant." So, what do consultants really do? Well, they help people solve business problems. And then I talk about how sales fits that, and sales helps people solve business problems. And they go, "Oh, I never thought. I thought it was just like pushing something on them that they didn't want." You know, no, that's not what it is. And so then we give examples. And it helps them turn around and say, well, that's something that would really interest me then. And our program is in our second year here at UT. We're a big school, so getting the word out across campus about professional selling. And we added the words business development to it because we do work on both of those. And I had a young girl come to our first session we had before we started the program. We kind of had an open house to talk about this program. And I said, so what brought you here? And she says, well, I'm really not interested in professional selling, but I'm really interested in business development. And I said, well, you came to the right place. So, and many of our companies, by the way, that we deal with today have business development reps as opposed to sales reps or professional sales reps. It's business development reps. And it's the same job, but it sounds different than selling. So...
Which is a whole different topic when we discuss that very few people actually have sales in their sales title, and how that fits into the world of why, you know, people don't necessarily enjoy the thought of either being in sales or dealing with a salesperson. And so, you know, account executive, business development representative, thinly veiled covers for a sales, well,
but it also
role.
Attracting people to the career that think of it in a negative way. That has a much loftier sound to it than a salesperson, you know, which can be behind a cash register in the, you know, the grocery store. I mean, in a retail outlet, or we can be somebody selling mainframes for Dell, you know, so. It's important for the perception to be professional and for everyone to understand that it's a professional kind of role. And putting the word professional in front of sales doesn't necessarily change the perception. But there are other ways to connote that this is a very high level, intellectual, problem solving kind of job that grows the business. I know my marketing counterparts, that on the surface, many people see marketing as the people that develop brochures, and that'll offend marketing people because they see themselves as the growth engine of the company, creating the plans that are going to make the business grow. And that's the high level version of marketing versus the low level of what people think are just the people that crank out brochures. It's comparable, I think.
With this future generation, with the ones that you've been teaching now, with in the 2 years of the program, the sales specific program, how do you see them respond to the authenticity side? You know, not just the telling people that maybe you can't be a good fit, but you know how you're helping them understand that part of who they are and what they're bringing to the table, and also compared to what, you know, consumers, customers, buyers, clients, what they're actually looking for from a salesperson?
Well, I think the first part of your question, I'm so encouraged by the young people that I deal with and the future of the world as a result of them. And I know some people that don't know them may not think that. They think they're lazy or whatever they may be thinking, but it's they are so focused on doing the right thing. And I think it's because there are so many role models in the world of unethical people and examples of unethical people. They're exactly the opposite of this. They want to do things that help people, not just in business, but help people in society, They really want, they want to make the world green. I mean, they want to make sure that they're not making the same mistakes my generation made, and that they see in the newspaper all the time. But I guess I could use his name. He's not alive anymore, but the Bernie Madoffs of the world, that, you know, I mean, and every day you can pick up the paper and find somebody's being arrested for some ethical issue. And they want to be 180 degrees away from that. And that's why on the surface, sales appears to be sometimes it might be doing something that, you know, you don't want to do yourself, and you don't want, you know, to be pushing it on other people. And when they find out that you need to be authentic, you need to be honest, and you need to be ethical, and you need to be helping people, it's a helping people kind of job. And they go, whoa, I never knew that. That excites me. And then they can take that lesson back out. And when they start working with clients or customers, customers respond to that today. They can read if you're authentic or not. And if you're not authentic, you know, they don't want to do business with you. And that's a core part of training salespeople today, is how to be authentic, how to be real. We just had a graduate of our program, and one of the first graduates, because she's now been out in the work world for 8 months, and she came and talked to our sales club. And by the way, she was terrific. She's doing a video for me to talk about what she thought about getting into sales and what it's been like and what she's done. She got promoted 2 months earlier, and she kept enforcing to the sales club. They kept saying, well, how do you make sales? She said, be authentic. You have to be authentic. You have to be yourself. And that gives you a lot of flexibility. And it resonated with me, and it resonates with my customers when I can just be myself and not have to be something that I'm not in order to make a sale. And the kids were all not. You're into something with your T-shirt and your book, and and you've got great ways in your book to talk about how to really come across as an authentic person. And you have to be authentic to come across as an authentic person. You can't force that. The kids are responding terrifically to that. And I'm so excited about how they'll succeed in the business world the right way as opposed to the wrong way.
And that's why, and I keep saying this, anyone who's listening to all these episodes this season and season 7 will hear me say the same thing over and over again. Super excited for conversations like this. Very excited when I realized this whole world of professional sales education existed. I'm a little slow and a late bloomer, so I just found it a couple of years ago as a wide thing. And thinking how a lot of us who end up in sales and then figure it out in the right ways, I will be judgmental and say the right ways, you know, for everyone's benefit, realize like you just be yourself. You don't have to act like a salesperson, or there's not some persona, or if you're not that extroverted, charismatic storyteller, center of attention person, like you can still be successful in sales. Like whoever you are, if you want to make yourself into a sales professional, you can. And so I love hearing, and that's why I love these programs like the one that you've got, where helping people realize that before they get out there in the real world and get influenced thinking that they've got to, you know, show up and be somebody else, right?
Yeah, and I'm blessed with, we have a 15 corporate partners that support our program. And so their people play a big role in helping educate our students. They come into classrooms, they come into our sales club, every one of them has talked about the need to be authentic in some way. They may not use that word, but the way to be, to make selling is to help people understand how your products fit their business need. And the best way to do that is to make sure people understand you feel that your products will help their business need, and not that you're trying to force something down their throat. A company called UiPath, I'm not sure you've ever heard of them, but you can go Google them. And they sell business systems. And this guy came in, and J.T. Seelman, I mean, I'll plug his name, was a sales guy for UiPath. And he painted a picture of how his company and his organization improved the lives of people in New York City following COVID, and it got the students to say, I want to do that. I want a job where I can go see the impact of what I do on helping people's lives. And I wish I'd recorded that session, because he was a masterful storyteller, and he started out talking about the business issue and the need for a product that would solve the issue post-COVID in New York City. And then he talked about how his product ended up, you know, saving that and how many people's lives they saved and all this stuff. And just, it was fascinating. And kids said, man, that's so good. So.
Yeah. And I love that transition to what sales can be about, which is, again, providing solutions, leaving people better than you found them, in whatever it is that you're selling. As long as it does that, then, you know, it gives you an opportunity to really improve people's lives. And of course, I'm encouraged and excited to hear what you're saying, is even from the corporate partners coming in, and obviously they want to help, you know, recruit the best of the future generation of sales, but what they're saying about selling and what it takes to really be successful. I think, you know, even though sales is not a profession in terms of like code of conduct and ethics and consequences and everything else like other professions, I think the more that companies stand up and say, here's what we want, here's what works, here's what we're about, I think that's amazing.
Yeah, good stuff.
Well, so this has been great. Part one, authenticity, so much good stuff. I can't wait. I have so many things I want to talk about in part two, which is persuasion. For people who are watching, tuning in, listening on the podcast, I know if they want to connect with you, which is how we initially did, they can find you on LinkedIn, Lamar Johnson. Also for the school itself, the University of Texas McCombs School of Business, it's mccombs.texas.utexas.edu, and the links will be in the show notes. Lamar, thank you for being here, and can't wait for the second part of our conversation.
Great. Pleasure, Jason. Thank you.
And for everyone tuning in, as I always say at the end of the show, I appreciate you being here, being a part of this journey to help switch sales from a dirty word like we were talking about, where people have this conception, it's not even a misconception, conception of what sales is and the kind of people who get into it and what they're doing on that transactional side, and what people don't want to get into themselves because they don't want to be a salesperson because of what that means, but helping switch that into something that's a profession, something where people can make money and do it in the right way and help people and leave people better than they found them. And I appreciate everybody tuning in to be a part of this journey. And as I always say, until next time, thank you for helping fill the world with authentic persuaders.